That's Galatians chapter 4, verses 4 to 6, on page 1170. But when the set time had fully come, God sent his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those under the law, that way ye may receive adoption to sonship. Because you are his sons, God sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, the Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father.
25th December. My dearest darling Edward, your kind gift of a partridge is cooing happily in the branches of that lovely little pear tree. What an enchanting, romantic present. Yours, Emily. 26th December. My dearest darling, the two turtle doves arrived this morning, and how thoughtful to send a little friend for the partridge in a tree of its own. 27th December. My darling Edward, six more birds. And are those three hens really all the way from France? You are really spoiling me. So extravagant. 28th December. My dear Edward, well, the house is really filling up with birds now. It can get a little loud. The last four won't stop calling. But I expect they'll calm down soon. I am grateful. Of course I am. 29th December. Dear Edward, I have to say I am a little relieved we've moved on from birds. Gold rings. Wow. Mummy said she'd like to use them to wring the bird's neck. She's only joking, I think. 30th December. Dear Edward, whatever I expected when the doorbell rang, it certainly wasn't six rather alarming geese and a doorstep covered in broken eggs. Has there been some sort of misunderstanding with your order? 31st December. More birds, Edward? Really? Our pond is too small for seven swans to swim in, and I'd rather not think about what's happened to the goldfish. I know you mean well, but let's call a stop to this, shall we? 1st Jan. Edward, frankly, I preferred the birds. The eight maids you sent to me seem to think we have an endless appetite for milk, and their cows are trampling all over our flowers. Is this some kind of joke? 2nd January. What were you thinking? Those nine dancers certainly drew a crowd from the neighbourhood. They're all talking about us, and poor Mummy was mortified. All I can say is, judging from the way they dance, they're certainly not ladies. If you value our friendship, kindly stop this ridiculous behaviour at once. 3rd January. As I write, paramedics are attending to the 10 men you sent. At their age, they really shouldn't be leaping, especially not in a garden full of animals and birds, what's left of it, not to mention what the animals leave behind them. This has gone too far. 4th January. This is the last straw, Edward. You know I detest bagpipes, and the sheer volume of 11 at once caused the neighbours to sign a petition to the council. I shall never speak to you again. 5th January. Dear sir, our client instructs me to inform you that following the arrival on her premises at 7:30 this morning of the percussion section of the London Philharmonic Orchestra, she has no course open to her but to seek a restraining order keeping your gifts at least a mile from her new residence, a care home for the mentally distressed. I'm making arrangements for the return of 12 trees, 40 items of jewellery, 40 livestock, 100 performing artists, and 224 assorted birds. Well, you may well know that song. On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me. I hear it probably almost every year at this time of year, but I don't usually stop to think about just how much was sent to that poor lady in the song. Just how excessive the gifts are, how extravagant and how over the top. But even that is nothing compared to the Christmas carols that we sing every year. I guess we know them quite well. But speaking for myself, how often do I stop and really listen? And how often do we think about the gift that they describe, about just what it was that was sent to us out of true love, sent to us on the first day of the very first Christmas. Well, this is a good moment, I think, to pause in the busyness of Christmas and take a moment to reflect on that. How excessive is the gift of the first Christmas? How extravagant is it? How generous is it? How over the top is it? Here it is in words from the Bible. God sent his son, who was born from a woman and lived under the law. God did this so that he could buy the freedom of those who were under the law. God's purpose was to make us his children. There's three statements there. Just want to highlight a word from each of those statements. That words that tell us how generous, how extravagant, how excessive the gift of Christmas really is for us. First statement, the first word, son. God sent his son, who was born from a woman and lived under the law. What an incredible gift to send, God's own son. Just think for a moment how amazing it is that God the Son of God the Father is born in this world from a human mother. When God the Father sent his son into the world as a baby, just think about who it was he was sending. The Bible talks about the son as being equal with God, just as powerful, just as infinite, a son who is eternal, who always was there and always will be there, a son who is creator, a whole universe full of things that we admire, that we're astonished by, things we can barely imagine or understand, all of it created by his power, from his imagination, in his honour, and for his sake. And a son who is so precious to God the Father. God has always been Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He's always been one God, but never lonely, never alone. Always in one God there has been a family, a community, Father, Son, and Spirit. God is love. So what an incredible, lavish gift God sent us. For a son like that to be born of a woman, to be born in the same way as you and me. Now Jesus is divine. There's no mention here of born of a man. He's born of a woman. Jesus is divine because he has no human father. His father is God. But on that first Christmas day, he also became human, fully human, born of a woman. And if he is born as one of us, as a human being, with all that involves, that means, as it says there, that means he's born under the law. He lives under the law, the law of God, the law of right and wrong, the law of good and evil, the law of life and death. And he is so far above that law before he's born. After all, the law of right and wrong is really just a reflection of the character of God and of Jesus. The reason that certain things are evil is because God hates them, for no other reason. The reason that other things are good are because they reflect God's character and his goodness and his love. He's far, far above the law, and yet he chose to be born into this world and live under the law as you and I do. At the end of the Second World War, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth was not yet queen. She was the daughter of her father, the king. She wanted to join in with the crowd celebrating the Second World War outside the gates of Buckingham Palace. She eventually persuaded them. She went out in ordinary clothes with her sister and one or two people to keep an eye on her. In those days, before TV, nobody would recognise her, just dressed in that way, mingled in among the crowds. And she was able to go down and move around and look up at Buckingham Palace and join the crowds as they shouted for the king to come and greet them. But imagine that she hadn't just done that for a few hours early in her life. Imagine she had chosen to spend her whole life living among her subjects as one of us. Can you imagine her queuing up to see the Tower of London and being told she's got to buy a ticket, and she can only see the crown jewels through a glass window after going through security checks? God the Son has done something far, far greater. Born into our world to live among us. Why? Why on earth would God send us his son? Why would he give us such a lavish, excessive, crazily over-the-top gift on the first day of Christmas? Well, that's the second statement. And in particular, the word freedom. Freedom. God did this so that he could buy the freedom of those who were under the law. The first word, his son. And then secondly, our freedom. This is why Jesus had to be born as of a woman under the law. He had to do that so he could buy our freedom. He had to be born of a woman because we are. He had to be under the law because we are. Now this is the hardest bit. The most I'm going to ask you to concentrate. It's not easy to concentrate on Christmas morning, I know that. So I won't ask for much. But just for the next few minutes, I think it's worth taking this in and following what the Bible is saying about that. Just think for a moment, what does it mean that we are under the law? It means we have to do what God's law says. And if we don't, we get punished. God's law is written behind me, on the wall behind the Christmas tree, actually. The Ten Commandments. It's written in our consciences. So we have that guilty feeling, that nagging voice telling us we're not doing the right thing. We haven't done the right thing. But there is no point in a law if it's got no consequences. It's not a law, is it? If there's no consequences to disobeying it, it's just advice. It's just a suggestion. But we are under the law of right and wrong. In a world created by God, good and evil really matters. And God sees our hearts. He's perfectly fair. He's a judge. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And he says that we are far worse than we realize. And far worse than we admit. And that is the reason we all die. And after death, we face God's justice, something even worse. But that is why we so need the wonderful gift that he sent at Christmas. For God's son to put himself under that same law that we're under. So that by doing that, he could buy our freedom. What would it cost to set me free? What would it cost to set you free from the death we deserve? Well, the penalty has to be paid. The sentence must be served. The punishment must be carried out. And God says, let me be that. Let me do that for you. Jesus became like us at Christmas so he can stand in for us on Good Friday. He became one of us at his birth so that he can take our place at his death. I wonder if you've read a story by Charles Dickens, A Tale of Two Cities. It has a character in it called Charles Darnay. He's from a wealthy French family. And he has a good friend, his English lawyer, Sidney Carton. And all through the book, all through the story, we're reminded that these two, as it happens, they look very similar and it is hard to tell them apart. It's the French Revolution. Darnay is put into prison because of the family that he's from. And the next day he is due to be executed, to be killed. But his friend Carton works out a way to save his life. Carton, as his lawyer, visits him in prison. He tricks Darnay, gives him some drugs so that Darnay won't refuse his help. They swap clothes and Carton arranges for Darnay to be taken out by a friend in safety, disguised as his own lawyer. And then he stays in prison for the night and the next day he is killed in place of his friend. Now, no analogy is perfect. It's not exactly like that with Jesus. But it does give us, I think, a sense of how much Jesus has done for us. What an incredible gift God sent. He sent his son for our freedom. And then finally, to make us his children. That's the last word, children. God's purpose was to make us his children. This is the reason, this is the purpose, this is the aim of the Christmas story. This is why God sent his son into the world. This is why his son died for our freedom. Not just so that we can be forgiven. Not just so that we can be let off the hook and get away with it and escape the judgment we deserve when we die. But something much, much more positive and much better than that. He wants to welcome us into his family forever, to make us his children, to adopt us, sons and daughters, in his home, at his table, as precious and as loved as Jesus himself. He sent his son to make us his sons and his daughters, to adopt and include us in that eternal community of love that I spoke about, Father, Son and Spirit, for all eternity, to belong to him. What a gift. What a lavish, extravagant gift to be given that lasts forever. On the 25th of December last year, 11-year-old Carter Kippart was opening his presents. When he got to the last present, he opened it up and found a set of adoption papers and with it a family photograph. His new parents, his five brothers and sisters, were all in the photograph. It had been taken before they knew him. And on it were these words: "All of us would love for you to be in the next picture of our family and to be part of our family. Would you like to be our son and brother? We love you." Well, you can imagine it took him quite a few moments to collect himself. And even then he wasn't able to speak. He couldn't manage any reply, but he just started to nod furiously. And how will we respond to that invitation from God to be part of his family? Will we nod furiously and say yes to it? Maybe you feel a little bit like Emily, getting all those presents from Edward. At first, you don't quite know how to respond to the Christmas message, just perhaps some polite thank yous, and then it all just seems a bit over the top, and you'd rather it was just kept at a distance. But I think the key is, have we really grasped how lavish the gift is? How excessive, how extravagant, how crazily over the top. Sent to us in true love, because when I think we've felt it and been moved by it, then really all we can do is nod and say yes. We'll take that gift.